Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from New York City is Tim Bonteps.
Howdy, fellas.
Where you attended the owners' meetings yesterday, which we will certainly be talking about.
Correct.
Very shortly here.
Incorrect.
And back in Dallas. He got back into the country, Bontemps.
Amazing.
Readmitted to the United States. It's Ban McMahon.
Howdy, partners. And I do take offense to Bontemps uttering the word howdy while sitting in a New York City apartment.
I'm still a farm kid, pal.
That's right. Little known that Bontemps grew up for some years on a dairy farm.
Some years. Some years are all the years.
Well, yeah. Well, not like when you were like 17, were you?
Yeah. What do you mean? Really? What do you mean?
Yeah, yes. I thought you moved out of there earlier than that.
No, he's not like me. Didn't get shipped off to boarding
school. Post I didn't go to boarding school like McMahon. I was on the farm until post college. So there you go.
Okay, I didn't know all that.
Well, I wish you'd go back.
He knows how to milk a cow, McMahon.
I have done that. It's not fun.
All right. Well, speaking of not fun, Adam Silver.
I'm utterly impressed
on Wednesday.
Jesus.
I wish you could have all seen his face that he just made when he delivered that joke. speaking of not being utterly impressed, how about that? You see that?
There you go. Nice multiple transition.
Adam Silver on Wednesday at the owners' meeting. There's been an effort in the last few years to stop calling NBA owners, and I understand why, because of the connotation that comes with it, and the Adam Silver would much prefer, and not only him, but others would much prefer to call them governors, and I get it, but they're still owners, and if you needed to be reminded of that, it was the way Adam Silver described the different standards with the way they are compared to other employees in the NBA. So that was one of the big takeaways. But Bontemps, you have covered many Adam Silver press conferences over the last decade. This was a challenging one before he said a word. I'm not sure he handled it well, and I'm not sure what the fallout's going to be. He was holding a very difficult hand. He had to explain that he had to discipline his boss, because that's what Robert Sarver is. Adam Silver, when he suspends a player or disciplines a general manager or a coach, those are technically his subordinates. Maybe not directly, but he has oversight over them. He is an employee of the owners. The owners are the shareholders in the league. When situations like this come up, they have to police themselves. And show me an organization across the world that polices itself the way it polices those below them. And so that was the reality that Adam Silver had to come out and discuss. I don't deny that. But Bontemps, he did not handle it well, and we now have fallout, and I can't predict what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that yesterday was probably the worst day, at least that I can think of Adam Silver's tenure. And I would say that for people that over the past, 8 or 10 years have looked at Adam Silver and, thought of him in a different light than, say, Roger Goodell, the owner of the NFL, or the commissioner of the NFL. I think you saw yesterday, those two guys have the same job. And, Adam standing there, and when Howard Beck from Sports Illustrated asked him, you look at these things that Robert Sarver has been credibly charged with doing after this very thorough 9-month investigation, anybody who worked for a team or anybody who worked for the league who did these things would be fired. What does that say about where the league is at? And Adam said, well, to be, let's start with the fact that there's a different set of factors in play for owners than there are for players. And or if there are for team employees, not for players. And later on, Mike Bass gave a statement, the NBA's PR guy, saying in no way did Adam try to say anything other than the fact that everybody is held to the same standard. But just to clarify that, I'm going to literally read what it was that he said, just so there's no confusion here, because the league can try to dress this up in any way that they want. But if the answer to a question of saying, what does it mean that this guy would not be thrown out? Adam Silver literally said, I want to say, you alluded to it, Howard, there are particular rights here of someone who owns a team as opposed to someone who is an employee. And at the end of the day, the right is that they cannot be fired by Adam Silver because, as you said, Adam Silver is working for them. And I think that entire press conference and everything Adam said, it all reflected that same core tenet, which is that he might not have been handed a great hand to play with here in terms of trying to make this look good. It was probably going to be a loss for him PR-wise, no matter what he said yesterday, based off how this played out. But it was made pretty clear to me sitting there that this was Adam Silver taking one for the team, more or less. And I thought the most telling thing beyond that answer to Howard's question was when I asked him, I read the one statement in the report that caused a lot of attention, which was this investigation has concluded that the statements made by Robert Sarver were not made with any racial or gender animus behind them. We'll get into the discussion about that, I think, in a bit, because that's pretty hard to justify.
I think they said that at least three times in certain ways. Yeah.
But if you say those things to me, I would say that there's animus behind them personally. That's my personal opinion. However, when I read that to Adam and I said, Adam, do you personally believe that to be the case? He had a very long pause. And then when he answered the question, he said, because I just want to make sure I get this right. He said, just trying to find it here. Stupid document is messed up. I accept their work. And then went on to give a long meandering answer that didn't say, I believe that to be the case.
So, yeah, I mean, it was the whole press conference was one long, awkward cop-out. And the simple fact of the matter is this. If 24 of the other 29 owners agreed that Robert Sarver needs to get run out of the league, he would be getting run out of the league. Okay. They didn't have 24 owners who agreed with that. Draw your own conclusions about that. But like you said, the owners are the bosses. They're the bosses of Adam Silver. Now, you hear a lot, this is a player's league. We might be about to find out just how much that's true. When you have LeBron James come out and, you know, tweet, make a public statement as strong as he did, this league got this wrong. Here's why I feel that way. Followed by the face or one of the faces of the Suns, Chris Paul, former, you know, Players Association president. And that's who I was curious, because the Suns' approach last year was, hey, the league will deal with that. We're going to hoop. We're going to take care of our business on the floor. This whole issue is a league problem. Well, Chris Paul came out strongly and said, this ain't enough. This isn't right. They got this wrong. So we're going to find out just how much pressure the LeBrons, the Chris Pauls, you know, the prominent players in the league are willing to put on Adam Silver, on, you know, the owners in this league. There's a year for this to play out. You know, basically there's one year where Robert Sarver's suspended, where his right-hand man's going to be running the Suns. I'm sure he'll have no involvement. I mean, we all understand it's a bunch of bull. But we'll see, you know, we'll see if Adam Silver, who has a history of caving to pressure from players, you know, how he handles what's in a really tough spot now, because the bosses are the owners. But he does have a history of giving in to pressure from players.
Yeah, it's unfair to the players that they have to do it, quite frankly.
Right.
It's unfair. I was in Phoenix. You guys may remember, if you listen to this pod for a while, when the Baxter Holmes story came out. And by the way, the report verified a huge majority of what Baxter Holmes reported. And I just remember, and look, you know, just like Adam Silver, his boss is Robert Sarver, give or take, you know, one of his bosses. team president and CEO Jason Rowley. I remember the statement he made the day the story came out, in which he said, the reporter in this instance has shown a reckless disregard for the truth. He has harassed employees.
There was a reckless disregard for the truth, all right, but it wasn't by Baxter Holmes.
Right. He has harassed employees and family members, used truth, theft, truths, and rumors to manufacture a story with which he's heavily invested and perpetuate a completely false narrative within the sports industry. So just because someone of authority says something's not true isn't necessarily the truth. We know that, okay? But it's unfair for the players to now have to apply the pressure. So when I was in Phoenix, there is probably almost no, at that time, it was in November of 2021. Monty Williams had as much capital as any professional, team member in all of Arizona at that time. And he said, we're going to wait for the investigation. And Chris Paul and Devin Booker said the same thing. And I remember sitting in that press conference and going, okay, reached down to my phone and booked my flight home the next day, because I knew they're just going to punt. And I was disappointed at the time that, of course, I didn't expect them to say, okay, this story is 100% true. I didn't expect them to side with ESPN. I expected them to let the situation play out, but they didn't even give any sort of statement that appealed to their coworkers with the Suns, that if this had happened, I feel terrible. They just totally punted. Okay. Well, now the investigation comes out and now they're going to be expected to do something. And so my question is, media day is in 11 days. Okay. What's the mood going to be then? And what's going to be expected of them then? And what are they really willing to do? Because like what I remember in the Donald Sterling situation, there was a feeling like, oh, the Clippers might do something here. But the Clippers were like, screw him. We're not letting him derail what we've worked for. And I got that. And so I'm not sure what's going to happen. I do know that the only way that anything does happen is through pressure. It's the owners are not going to do the quote unquote right thing. But something else that you asked him, Bontemps, Adam Silver, that was, you asked him whether or not he asked Robert Sarver or discussed with Robert Sarver voluntarily selling the team. So twice
there was no pause in his answer. There was no pause in his answer to that question. That was an instantaneous no.
Okay. So let's get that on the record that I can't believe that he didn't. But okay, let's take him for what he said on the record. No, he didn't. Twice in the last decade, we have seen teams be sold by owners following this type of situation. One was Donald Sterling, and it's some nuance here. Adam Silver banned Donald Sterling for life, but they didn't force him to sell the team. There was no action by the owners to sell the team. What happened was his wife, Shelley, went to court, got him declared mentally unable to run the team. She got control of the team, and then she sold it basically out from under him for $2 billion. Although I think at the end, according to what Ramona Shelburne reported in her great 30 for 30, the Sterling affair, which is, by the way, about to be turned into a TV show on FX. They're going to film it starting, I think, in October. And Lawrence Fishburne is playing Doc Rivers. And I can't remember who's playing Donald Sterling. It's another big name actor. But anyway, she reported that at the end of it, Donald's like, oh, we got $2 billion for it. Okay. But and then the other situation was Bruce Levinson from the Atlanta Hawks, who sent a racially insensitive email out to some team employees about procedures at the arena. Bruce Levinson did not have a history, anything close to Robert Sarver or Donald Sterling. He was generally well, although their ownership group had a lot of infighting. Bruce Levinson was generally well respected by fellow owners, and he sold the team voluntarily. He realized that this was bad for the NBA brand, bad for the Atlanta Hawks brand, and he sold the team, voluntarily. And, you could argue that the correct thing for Robert Sarver to do for the NBA brand and the Suns brand is to sell voluntarily. But if Adam Silver didn't even bring it up to him, I don't think voluntarily is coming unless he's shoved to the wall, Bontemps.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think if we've seen anything about the way Robert Sarver has gone through this entire thing, he certainly hasn't, you know, I enjoyed Adam Silver saying he expressed complete and full remorse to him in the wake of this stuff. I mean, he's certainly the statements that he's put out where he has continued to say that Baxter's reporting wasn't corroborated in the investigation and, you know, the other things that they've gone on. I wouldn't exactly say that his stance has fully changed. And look, I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, like you would certainly think that as a person in this situation, you know, if they were going to, quote, do the right thing would have been to exit stage right. Robert Sarver's not going anywhere. That much has been made clear throughout this entire process. And so, you know, certainly the league wasn't going to lean on him to sell the team unless they're put in a position where they feel like they have to McMahon's point. The owners are not going to line up to do that. And unless there becomes really intense public pressure, I don't think that's going to happen in any aspect. And that was what, to me, what made yesterday so interesting was walking out of that press conference. I thought it was a rough day for Adam Silver, but I sort of thought that was going to be the end of it. And then a few hours later, you have in pretty rapid succession, LeBron tweeting about this, followed by the MBPA's new executive director, Tomika Tramaglio, putting out a statement, slamming the punishment, followed by Chris Paul putting out multiple tweets saying that the punishment didn't go far enough. Now, maybe that's the end of it, but
yeah, who knows? I mean, this podcast isn't going up till tomorrow. Who knows what'll happen, if anything, tonight?
Right. But I think it's safe to me, at least, and I'm curious what you guys think. I would guess the NBA was not expecting those salvos to hit them last night. And I would expect that that came as a pretty big surprise.
Well, and pressure can come. There's two potential major sources of pressure. You're getting it from the players, you know, Players Association, the face of the league in LeBron, one of the faces of the Suns in Chris Paul. And then the other potential source of pressure is financial pressure.
Boom.
Are there going to be sponsors, you know, major sponsors of the Suns that pull out?
And that's the thing. And that's the thing, real quick, McMahon. The thing that people forget about Sterling is, to your point earlier, Brian, it wasn't Adam Silver saying you have to sell the team. It was players saying we are not going to play. And it was advertisers saying we are not going to spend money on this team. Right. That was what precipitated everything happening. It was financial pressure and internal / external pressure. It wasn't the league saying you have to sell the team.
Right. And so it can, if it gets to a point where it is publicly uncomfortable for Robert Sarver and he's bleeding money because sponsors are pulling out and, you know, he still has to fund. And let's be honest, Robert Sarver, in addition to all this stuff, has long had a reputation for being a total cheap. So I think the financial pressure could very well be the thing here, but you know, we'll see how sponsors react to this, because at a certain point, okay, you can either bleed money or you can cash out and get your $2 billion or whatever the price is going to be for. I mean, it's going to be minimum 1.6. Jazz and the Timberwolves are selling 1.6.
It's going to be north of 2.
Right. That's
north
what I'm saying.
It's going to be north of, no. I would guess north if of the three? Suns were, I mean, he doesn't own the full team. He's got a whole bunch of limited partners. I would guess that the Suns sale price would be in excess of 2.5.
Yeah. I think it's reasonable. I mean, you look at the smallest markets are 1.6, 1.7 now.
He paid in the neighborhood of 400, I believe, for the team in 2004.
Right. So take your 6x earnings and, you know, go live on an island somewhere.
Yeah. But the thing about, you know, that's what, you know, Adam Silver said. He said, you're underestimating the reputational harm that, you know, he was defending the punishment. He was saying, you're underestimating the reputational harm he's suffering.
his reputation Robert Sarver has in never, the first place.
Right. Robert Sarver's never cared about his reputation. He does. He has cared about the money. The other thing, though, is that there's two things at play here. Number one, as this is going on, there's a collective bargaining agreement negotiation going on between the players and the owners. From what we can glean, it's going okay. There doesn't appear to be issues that are headed for, you know, keyword both, being appear to be or right
both
now.
Sides. Yeah. Both sides can opt out in December. The deal expires. If they opt out, it expires next summer. I think everybody involved agrees that they're going to get a deal done sometime before the end of this year. I'd be a big surprise if we get past December 31st and a new deal isn't done.
Right. So while that's going on, if the players plan some sort of action, if they were able to organize upon some sort of action, that could affect those talks. And I'm not saying that would prevent them from doing that, but I think it's foolish not to recognize that that's going on. The second thing is that the Suns are red hot. Even though they had a disappointing end to last season, they are one of the hottest properties in the NBA. They are printing money out there. This is, their games are sellouts. They've got a sports book operating in the arena. They've got a lot of interest in the Valley in an investment there. So, you know,
they've got their own craft beer.
If you say so.
It's true. No, I've sampled.
In the sports book there?
No, but at various locales throughout the downtown Phoenix area.
I see. So, you know, a sponsor, if they say we're not doing business with the Suns anymore, you know, it's a little bit more challenging to do that than it was a couple of years ago. If you want to be on that Suns rocket ship, which at some point this year, this is going to be settled one way or another, and the Suns are going to go and they're going to have games. And that's probably what the league is banking on. Now, the reason that the league put this report out when it did is because the owners' meetings were Tuesday, Wednesday. But it has the ancillary benefit of happening in a dead spot in the NBA calendar. Media day is in 10, 12 days. But, you know, this is something that there could be pushback on and then it passes over. So it could go either way. I really don't know. My guess is that we don't hear about this, that ultimately it sort of everybody has their say. And then this becomes an issue a year from now when Sarver is being determined whether he can come back, but I could be wrong.
Media day will certainly be interesting. And Chris Paul kind of got out ahead of it, but, you know, obviously he still will be asked about it. What Devin Booker says and what Monty Williams says at media day.
Monty Williams, I think, I know Chris Paul is such an important voice of the league, but Monty Williams is the voice of the Suns. And Monty Williams just signed a contract extension. He's coach of the year, contract extension. He is huge approval rating. He is firmly entrenched in that position. He is, he may never have the backing and authority. Not only that, but his quote unquote boss has been suspended for a year. So in theory, he doesn't have to answer a voicemail, a text message, an email, whatever. He won't see him because he's not allowed on team facilities. So he is in position, should he choose, to lead something one way or the other. I agree. I don't think it's fair for him to lead a crusade, but I'm just saying if he chose, he would be a potential leader in that.
Yeah, and Chris Paul could too. I think Devin Booker could too, as the faces of the franchise. We'll see if they choose to, because, you know, I can certainly also understand the approach of, hey, we're going to address this one time. We'll say what we have to say, and then we've got a season that we need to focus on.
Yeah.
You know, last year they essentially chose not to address it, chose to punt it. Now it's
and
right
we're
there.
We're the number one overall seed. And this year, ultimately Sarver is going to be gone. And it may be a blessed year for them, you know, in a way.
I'm less optimistic about the Suns as a basketball team right now than you are, but that's okay.
Well, I'm just saying, like, once this, however this gets settled, they're not going to have to see him all year.
True.
You know, so, all right. So I guess to be continued, we'll see, especially on media day. Bontemps, this is a hard turn to trivia, but here we are.
Well, if there's anybody who can handle some awkwardness, it's Bontemps.
You know, I have to deal with you all the time. I'm very used to it. This week's trivia sponsored by nobody. We're gonna talk to the
hey, if sponsors pull out of the Suns, we got some trivia for you.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Every college football season, Goodyear knows the importance of winning on the road. The road will always demand confidence, the confidence to handle whatever the journey brings and to perform under tough conditions. And just like the players and the fans of college football, Goodyear is ready. Are you ready for the road? Visit Goodyear.com to find the right Goodyear tires for whatever road you're on this season. Goodyear, more driven.
Now it's time for Hoop Collective Trivia.
We're about to talk about the Portland Trailblazers. So Damian Lillard is fourth currently among all players in active points per game. Who are the three players that are ahead of him? And if that's super easy, we'll do the top 10 overall.
LeBron, Luka, KD.
Two of those are right.
Who's wrong?
Luka is incorrect.
Okay, there must be a... Is there a minimum, or is Luka not above him career-wise?
Durant. Oh, you said KD.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I'm just going by basketball reference.
I think that there might be what is the
basketball rep? Oh, wait a second. Do we have a minimum here?
Yeah, I think we got technicality here.
Career. We're going by at least minimum 400 games.
Okay, because Dame is averaging what?
24.6.
Okay, yeah, Luke is at 26.4. Okay, yeah. So
minimum 400 games. I should have included that. Good catch, McMahon.
It's not Steph, is it?
Steph is fifth.
Okay. I thought Steph was a little bit lower. Who?
So you got Durant, LeBron, Dame, and Steph.
Devin Booker.
Devin Booker is seventh.
Damn.
Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid. Has he not played 400 games?
It's possible, I guess.
He is not on the list. Let me see if, Joel. Joel's played 328 career games. Wow.
How about them apples?
And averaged how many points?
26.
Yeah.
Just looked
26.
It up.
26 even.
Okay. Kyrie.
Kyrie is ninth.
Bam.
You're chipping away at the top 10.
Who are we overlooking?
Anthony here? Davis.
Anthony Davis is sixth. So far, you have third, eighth, and 10th.
Is Tatum played 400?
Tatum has not.
Okay.
He's not. DeMar DeRozan. DeMar is 14th.
No.
There's people yelling right now because they know the answer.
Oh, for sure. Donovan Mitchell.
Donovan Mitchell, I don't believe, has played 400 games either.
Not Cat, is it? Can't be Cat.
Cat is eighth.
Damn.
So you're missing third and 10th.
We are clearly overlooking somebody who is
very, very clearly overlooking somebody.
Brad Beal.
Bradley Beal is 12th.
Jesus.
The two guys left were teammates.
Paul George.
Paul George is 15.
That's not it. He doesn't score that much. That much.
Now you've only missed a third, 10th, and 11th out of the top 15.
Giannis got off to too slow of a start.
Giannis is 13th.
Yeah.
The two guys Jimmy left Butler. In the top 10 were teammates. Jimmy Butler is not in the top. He's far down. He's 30th.
I'm just guessing at this point.
Two guys left.
The two guys in the top 10 were teammates.
Joker, Jamal Murray? That can't be it.
They both won MVPs.
Russell Westbrook
Russ
was ranked
Harden.
That high?
James Harden.
Russell Westbrook is 10th, and James Harden is 3rd.
Oh, we didn't say Harden. That's embarrassing. We're going to delete this.
I thought you'd get the top three really quick, and McMahon rattled them off, and then just if
I know, just I just didn't. I didn't. I kind of didn't hear.
Totally forgot about Harden.
I should have checked the rate stat first, though, but because 400 games is basically 5 full seasons, so it counts for.
That was kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you. I don't care anything happens. I can't believe we didn't say Harden. All right, what's going on in
this
Portland?
This won't be sponsored by Adidas, that's for sure.
More important, yeah. More importantly, yeah. Well, the guy I started with is a pretty prominent Adidas guy too, so at least made up for it with that.
What's going on in Portland?
Why would they do that? Very strange trade.
Why would you do that?
Well, there's an interesting ownership situation in Portland where Jody Allen, I'm just acknowledging this, that Jody Allen, Adam Silver has said that Jody Allen must sell the team at some point to satisfy the will of her brother, Paul, who passed away several years ago. But we don't know when she's selling it. And that came to light recently. And Phil Knight of Nike, one of Nike's founders, he made a bid to buy it. And so it's sort of a weird situation that they are in right now. But this offseason, they spent some money. Damian Lillard signed a 2-year extension for $122 million, so $60 million a year. And he's locked up through 27. And I can't remember the two years that he extended were 25, 26 and 26, 27 for 58.5 and 63.3 million.
And I think that's 35 and 36 in terms of his age in those years.
Yeah. He's 31. He only played 29 games last year.
I think he just turned 32.
Oh, he turned 32. Oof. Mm-hmm. Now that that $63.3 million season in 26-27 is a player option.
I'll opt in for
What do we think? What do we think?
I would think he's going to opt in there.
They signed Anthony Simons to an extension, and I was afraid that they were going to go crazy here because of some of the stuff that they were saying about Anthony. He had put up huge numbers after Dame, and I like him as a player. Don't get me wrong. I just, he was just sort of putting up numbers on a team that was kind of trying to lose. They got him for $100 million over 4 years was the extension. They traded for Jeremy Grant, a deal that what could cost them. One first round pick was the central part of the trade.
Ended up being the Bucks pick in 25 because they didn't make the playoffs, right? Or no, it was top. It was protected wasn't it?
They traded for
him. It was the Bucks pick.
I think the Pistons already traded it.
It was the Pelicans. It was either the Pelicans pick or the Bucks pick, and the Pelicans made the playoffs. That was what the trade was, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they made the trade in the offseason.
The Pelicans pick was already decided. The Pelicans pick, by the way, they're not going to end up getting a first rounder out of the CJ McCollum deal because the Pelicans made the playoffs.
Right.
That was what I was thinking of. Right. That's right.
Right.
They still owe a lottery protected pick to Chicago from the Larry Nance deal, who. He ended up being rerouted to New Orleans in that deal. They paid Nurkic a nice little contract. I think it was 4 years, $70 million this year.
Yusuf Nurkic.
Their epic tank job only produced the number 7 overall pick. They got Shaedon Sharpe, who if you've seen him play, you're a big fan of, what is it, Canadian high school basketball?
Well, he's
right. He's one of the biggest. He's one of the biggest mysteries in the draft. He didn't play for the last couple of years, and it looked like it in Summer League. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Well, he played 4 minutes in Summer League and then hurt his shoulder and then was out for the rest of Summer League.
That's right. He only played one game. That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so the Blazers, they've got some pieces sharp. Anthony Simons. You can throw Keon Johnson in there. They've got some.
Tell you who else you can throw in there too is Jabari Walker, son of Samaki Walker, who our guy Mike Schmitz drafted with basically the last pick of the second round in this year's draft, and who was a stud at Summer League. Looked pretty good. Okay.
So they've got some pieces for the future, but they're basically a team that's in win now mode, and the ceiling's not very high. They're an expensive team in win now mode who, they're a play-in team, but I don't see any realistic path for them to get out of the first round.
They also signed Gary Payton this offseason away from the Warriors.
They have a pretty good team, but they're sort of a, to your point, McMahon, like we talked about Sacramento recently for this segment, and they're sort of a supersized version of Sacramento, right? Where this is to me a significantly better team than the Kings. That's why I think the Kings are sort of in their own tier and 11th in the West. Like they're just, they're going to need help to get into the play-in. Even though they made some okay moves this summer, but to your point, like you look at Portland and they're right in the mix to me with the Lakers and maybe New Orleans, like kind of in the 8 to 10 ish range.
Yeah, somewhere 7 to 10
in the West range. But to your point, like Shaedon Sharpe is going to have to become a monster player. Mm-hmm. Like that's their one ascendant piece, and he could be the best player in the draft. Like he is a monster toolsy prospect. Like it could work out, but you're talking about a guy that's probably going to need some time at minimum if he's going to become a really good player. And your best player is already in his early 30s, is a small guard, is coming off abdominal surgery after not looking great at times last year before the surgery. Now, he says that's fixed a problem that's been there for a while. And we all love watching Dame play. Certainly expect Dame to still be really good. But, that's sort of a tough line to walk where you've got a team that's built to be pretty good, but if your ceiling is maybe getting out of the play-in, you're just going to be kind of stuck in purgatory for a while.
I think what they found out was that the Dame CJ as the core of your team that had a ceiling on it, and their ceiling was they got to the Western Conference Finals once and they got swept. Other than that, they were pretty much first round fodder almost every other year. And in a few of those years, they were swept in the first round. Yep. And basically this team's kind of signed, CJ's out, Anthony's in, and I don't see just a whole lot of difference. And, so much of the discussion around the Blazers over the last 2 or 3 years has been, is Dame going to stay? Should Dame stay? Should they blow it? Well, that has been decided. Dame wants to spend his whole career there. They, supermaxed him as far out as they could. If he's happy spending his entire career in Portland on teams that are somewhere between pretty good and very good, but not legitimate contenders, okay. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to make almost $500 million in NBA salary.
Franchise icon, best player in the history of the franchise. Yeah. There's a lot of cool things about that.
Yeah, there's plenty of NBA legends who don't have rings. I just think Dame is destined to be one of those guys. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I just have a hard time looking at the Blazers and seeing upside, real significant upside for the rest of his career.
So I'm not going to pay too much attention to their offense last year because Dame only played 29 games, and also they were tanking at the end. They were a bottom four offensive team, but they ranked second to last in defense. And so, and Chauncey Billups, we don't know a whole lot about him as a coach yet, but Chauncey Billups was a first-class defender his entire career. Mm-hmm. And so you would think that a Chauncey Billups team would be a good defensive team. They were a horrible defensive team, and a lot of that had to do with personnel. So, okay, they've invested, you know, $600 million in Damian Lillard and Anthony Simons, two small guards. So that's a problem. So what do? Okay, they go out and get Jeremy Grant, who, when he's healthy and playing well, is a plus defender, can defend multiple positions. They sign Gary Payton, again, a good defender, can defend multiple positions on the perimeter. So they invested in improving defensively. And if the Blazers
Josh Hart's a defensive improvement.
True. They traded for Josh Hart. They could have cut Josh Hart. They had the option. He had a non-guaranteed contract. They did not do that. So Josh Hart is there as well. So they've invested in Josh Hart's pretty much the core piece that they got back for CJ McCollum at this point, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
They used some of the assets to get Jeremy Grant. You know, if Joe Cronin, their general manager, was here, he'd say, well, we also traded for Jeremy Grant. So that's just to be fair. But the only chance this team has of taking a step forward and, you know, outfoxing the teams that were back there with them that are trying to ascend, like the Lakers, like the Kings, is that they have to get much better on defense. I don't think that they're equipped to be a top 10 defensive team, although, you know, I guess stranger things have happened, but they can't be 29th again, because if they're 29th again, they're going to be right back in the lottery next year.
No question. And the other guy that we haven't mentioned, who I'm really interested to watch this year, is Nasir Little. He really started to come on last year during the middle of the season. Then he had a shoulder injury, missed a big chunk of the year, but as a big athletic wing, you have him and Jeremy Grant playing the two forward spots. Like you mentioned, Brian, you can have Gary Payton come in and replace either CJ or either Dame or Anthony Simons and have another plus defender out there with either Dame or Simons handling the ball. Like that's at least the foundation. Plus you have Hart coming off the bench. That's at least the foundation of a team that has the ability to play both ways, you know, in at least a good a fashion as the teams with Dame and CJ that, you know, were legitimate teams that could get to the second round of the playoffs. It did, you know, through a bit of a fluky path, but still got to one conference finals, like had some playoff success. My question is, I think CJ McCollum, while maybe a little bit overrated over the course of his career, is a really good player. And I'm not sure Anthony Simons is going to be CJ McCollum. And they have invested a ton of money in him to be really a co-star with Dame. And I, like you said, he's put up some numbers in losing situations, but I'm not convinced that he's going to walk in and be the kind of player they need to really carry them at the other end of the court as well.
No. And I think they're a competitive team. I just think they're a third tier team. You know, they're a play-in type of team. And, you know, it's funny because Dame has had some of the best playoff moments of any active player. I mean, you talk about the bye-bye shot to basically, you know, put a fork in the Thunder in that era of the Thunder.
Who's had better playoff moments than Dame, like collectively?
I mean, certainly, you know, you can Steph Curry, LeBron. Like the guys who've won multiple, you know, Kyrie Irving hitting a, you know, that shot in game 7.
No, I mean, if you're saying like, you know,
I'm talking about like having three or four, Matt, like obviously like one, yeah, you know, Giannis's game 6 of the finals supersedes it, but
yeah, the
he's
guys
had three
two,
or four incredibly memorable moments.
Well, and the two series ending walk off buzzer beating goodbye 3-point shots, they're iconic moments, but that's also two of the four playoff series that he's won in his career. There's only been 3 years in his career that he's gotten out of the first round. He's a decade in now. And I don't know if he's getting out of the first round again.
Can win the in-season tournament.
Yeah, possible. Hey, celebrate a play-in championship like Dame's old pal Pat Bev did in Minnesota. I don't know.
I am, you know, obviously the in-season tournament again was a very minor part of this press conference that Adam Silver gave this week. Clearly in-season tournament is going to happen. It's probably going to come in the CBA this fall because they have to come to an agreement with the players on it. You have to collectively bargain it. The Blazers are the kind of team though, that I do think that concept is built for, like a team that's trying to win that in the NBA, like just doesn't have a path to winning a championship. Like, Damian Lillard has no path to win a championship in Portland. But, like, if you win this in-season tournament, down the road, potentially that is something that is seen as a accomplishment that you put on the ledger at the end of your career. You won 4 Bill Russell Cups or whatever they decide to call this thing. Like, I am curious to see kind of what the evolution of that thing is. Cause like, if you look at European soccer, which is what Adam Silver looks to compare this thing to, there are teams in these leagues that will not play, you know, they'll pull back in a certain cup because they're trying to either win their league or win in the Champions League or win something else. So they'll say, oh, we're going to play younger guys or maybe going to give guys a night off here. And if we lose, we lose. Like, I will be curious to see sort of how teams adapt to this thing and try to attack it, because it could be something that is seen as a really cool thing down the road.
The thing about European soccer is that there is the reward for those other competitions is to win the competition itself. What you want is to say, we held the trophy this year. Right. What we don't know about the in-season tournament is what the reward incentive is going to be. Maybe it's going to be money, and okay, fine. You think Dame is going to get excited about money? He's got $500 million.
He seems to be pretty excited about money consistently.
Yeah. So the thing is, like, you know, what can you give that's not outrageous? Like you can't give a guaranteed playoff berth, I don't think. But what can you give that matters? And I'm sure they've had a lot of brainstorming sessions. But you know, that would be interesting. That'll be interesting. We'll be talking about that more in the future. So, all right. Well, the Blazers will be a team that what they deem as a successful season will be different than the rest. And they're playing in a conference where they're going to have to bring it just about every night. And so, again, like I said this about several teams this year, they could have a really successful season by what their talent level is and still not get what they want, because that's the way the league is set up now. ESPN and Anscape contributor Dominique Foxworth has a new podcast every Tuesday and Thursday, bringing his unique perspectives on football, the personalities surrounding it, and just about anything else he finds interesting or thinks you might. So check out the Dominique Foxworth Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Okay, before we go, I want to talk about, I made a trip to Cleveland this week to have a sit-down interview with Donovan Mitchell. Donovan was... Just for the record, I didn't ask for the photo. Okay. The Cavs asked for the photo, and Donovan was happy to do the photo.
Photo ops.
He had sweatshirts made of your iconic moment. Yes. Listen,
I gave him permission,
Wendy,
for the trademark.
If I don't get a sweatshirt, I might boycott the podcast.
Well, you'll have to speak to Mr. Mitchell. I don't have a supply of the sweatshirts. You'll have to speak to him.
Clearly you've got it in there.
But yeah, so
double XL hoodie, please.
Skip right by giving you one. You skip right by that. Just skip right by. Not going
to
do it.
What do you mean? I don't have them to give.
Well,
you'll have to.
I feel like you have
Mr.
connections.
Mitchell.
I'm with mm-hmm. McMahon.
Well, anyway, there's a lot of excitement in Cleveland. As I like to point out, I've said this before, but I'm just going to reiterate it. They haven't made the playoffs without LeBron since 1998. The idea that they're going to have a team that is competitive without LeBron James is something that nobody in the, you know, who's, you know, younger than 48 can possibly remember. So
been 30 years this year since they won a playoff series without LeBron James.
Yes,
I was 98, in 93, right?
Well, no, they made the playoffs after that. But they haven't won a series since 92, 93.
At my eighth grade graduation party, we watched the Cavs lose to the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals, 1992.
I want to look up something quick while you're setting this up.
So anyway, one of the things I got to do when I was in Cleveland is watch the Cavs. The Cavs kindly let Woj was there too. He did a podcast with Donovan. You can listen to that on the Woj pod. We got to watch the Cavs go through a run, a pickup game. And it was Donovan's first pickup games with his Cavs teammates. And, you know, when you're watching out there on the court, it's like, this is a pretty good team. You know, you got Garland, you got Darius Garland out there. You got Evan Mobley out there, who was just wickedly blocking a couple of the younger Cavs guards who they have, wickedly blocking them going to the basket, you know, with complete no emotion whatsoever. Just they come in and he just doesn't even change expression on his face and just viciously blocks it. Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, you know, almost their entire team was there. You know, like, I don't want to go too far down the roster, but like Dean Wade looked good in the run that I watched. And one thing that I was interested about was they had two courts going and they were scrimmaging on one court, and on the other court, Ricky Rubio was there. And, you know, Rubio re-signed with the Cavs over the summer. He tore his ACL. I think it was in late December, early January. He looked good. Now, I am not a physical therapist. I am not a doctor, but he had no brace on his knee. He was doing full court work, strength work. I mean, he's obviously not going to be ready for opening day, but I don't think he's like February. I think his, you know, based on what I saw, he's a lot closer than I would have thought. And so they're looking forward to getting him back too. And so just a lot of optimism in Cleveland. And in talking to Donovan, you know, he definitely talked about the Jazz. He did not agree with Danny Ainge saying that the guys didn't believe in each other. And his big thing with Ainge was he was only here for 6 months before he decided that, you know. We obviously didn't think the Jazz believed in each other during, we didn't use those words, but, you know, I respectfully listened to him. He was on the team, but I didn't have a, I couldn't really, I understood why the Jazz made the deals that they made. They had a team that paid $20 million in luxury tax last year that finished fifth, and the two-star players didn't have great chemistry. But
and they got bounced in the first round by a team that didn't have a superstar for the first three games of the series. It was time for Utah to blow it up.
Yeah. But look, I, you know, obviously Donovan wasn't thrilled with that Danny Ainge said that. We talked about that. We talked about the Knicks. He said something interesting. He believes, and I mean, a handful of people would know whether this is true or not, and maybe we'll find out in the future. He believes that he was very close to being traded to the Knicks. Like the deal was almost done. You know, he got traded on a Wednesday. The Monday of that week is when the Knicks elected to come to terms with RJ Barrett, which effectively ended their talks, the Jazz and Knicks. On that Sunday, he thought, any minute his cell phone was going to ring and say the deal's done. And so he told me he had specifically not wanted to get involved. He was totally staying out of it. He was working out on his own with his trainer. He was playing with guys and he didn't want to go to the day by day of, and, but yet he allowed himself on that Sunday to think, I'm going to be a Knick very, very soon. And for some reason, he believed that it was like about to happen. And I don't know how close it was, but him talking about that, I don't think probably thrilled Knicks fans. But he was genuinely excited about playing for the Cavs, genuinely excited about what his team, what is on his roster. I don't know how far they can go. To me, they'll go as far as Evan Mobley can take them. But I do think they have a couple year window here because of how young their team is. And just seriously, since I've been covering the NBA, I've never really been around a Cavs team that didn't have LeBron on it where there was enthusiasm. And they were effervescent with enthusiasm when I was there. I
love when you use that word. That's one of your favorite words, and I didn't know what it meant until I heard you say it. And I looked it up, and it's a great word.
I think it
with an E. No, I think it describes, and look, the reason the Cavs are willing to put these chips on the table and willing to be this aggressive is because what the core that's still in place that they've added Donovan to, what that core did last year was, you know, give them that franchise a big boost of reason for optimism, right? They didn't make the playoffs last year, but people thought they were going to be a mid to high lottery team. And, you know, they were when Rubio played last year, they were 20-14. Darius Garland took a step into being an all-star. Jared Allen, same thing. Evan Mobley, you know, if he was rookie of the year, nobody would have blinked. You know, we ended up runner-up rookie of the year. Certainly looks like a superstar. Now you add Donovan to that core, you know, without really giving up any pieces that were major parts of them winning. No disrespect to Markkanen, but we've talked about it. It was just an odd fit positionally. Obviously, Sexton got hurt last year.
I know the Cavs don't regret anything about the trade, but I do think the Cavs thought that Markkanen was on the verge of making a bit of a jump. I'm not saying I agree, but I'm just telling you, he did have a great summer for Finland.
Oh, for sure.
But they talk about Markkanen in very glowing terms. And, you know, they do.
He was part of the trade that brought in Donovan Mitchell. I'm sure that's why they do.
I'm just telling you,
listen,
the Cavs
their small forward
marketing experience.
Their small forward rotation was hot garbage last year, and it's hot garbage now. Listen, you mentioned Dean Wade before. Like, no joke, Dean Wade's a hugely important player on this team because they got nobody who plays small forward on the team.
Well, they got nobody with size LeVert, on the sort wing. Of, and yeah. Dean Wade actually has some size.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he might be their best three. That's the situation.
Is Caris LeVert a three? I think he's starting there.
I mean, he might be starting there, but I think he's going to come off the bench as there.
Yeah, he shouldn't.
He's a two guard who doesn't guard anybody. Like, that's the thing. Like, when we were talking about them compared to Atlanta last week, like, their top end talent's really good, but their wing in particular and their defense on the perimeter is right now looks pretty terrible. And it's going to be interesting to see how JB Bickerstaff handles that. Cause obviously when you got Evan Mobley and Jared Allen inside, that's going to clean up a lot of mistakes. You mentioned watching those guys just swatting shots left and right. But if you look at the teams they're playing in the East, you got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You've got James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, even Tobias Harris in Philly. You've got Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday in Milwaukee. You've got Trae Young and DeJounte Murray in Atlanta. They got nobody to guard any of those guys. So that I'm very curious to see how the Cavs handle that this year.
Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero in Miami. Like, all these teams have really good wing scorers. And
who are big.
And who all of them are big. And look at the Cavs. Who's going to guard those guys? Like, is Donovan Mitchell going to really commit himself to playing defense like he did at the beginning of his career? Maybe
he's not. I mean, that's the thing. The thing is, they need size because Mitchell and Garland, they have great interior size, but they don't.
Donovan
have size.
Mitchell's always had great physical. I mean, everybody remember like the thing that put him on the map. He had a game in summer league where he had like six or seven steals his first or second summer league game. He came into the league as this long, athletic.
Yeah, but he's not defending Jason Tatum.
Well, no, his defensive comp coming in the league was Avery Bradley. We haven't seen it. And honestly, that was a huge source of Rudy Gobert's frustration is he has all the tools. Like, you can say he's 6'1". I think the wingspan's like 6'9", 6'10".
Yeah.
You know, Rudy's point was always he has all the tools to be a really good defender. Like, I'm going to hold him to that standard. That was on the list of sources of the frustration between them. Not at the top.
By the way,
I'd
like to point out
Darius
something.
Garland. Maybe he'll, you know, there's at least the ability for him to take a bit of a step back usage-wise offensively and be a better defensive player. But to me, like, if you're talking about Cleveland, that perimeter defense and specifically the wing defense, it's
they're not a complete team.
Got to fix it.
I will say that you'll be interested in this, McMahon, for your notes. Donovan told me that he and Rudy would go to dinner and chill together. So we have Quinn Snyder reporting that they would eat lunch. And now Donovan's saying they would eat dinner.
What about breakfast?
How about breakfast?
We don't have breakfast information. We will
brunch.
We will try to get more information on their breakfast habits.
Any snacks? Maybe
Rudy would bring in some baguettes and croissants.
I'll bet Rudy could make a terrific French omelet. It would be terrific, I think.
I bet you that his chef can. I don't think Rudy's doing a whole lot of in the kitchen.
Well, he would provide. How about this? He would provide a wonderful.
I have a little doubt about that.
All right. Well, the Cavs will be a team.
By the way, Rudy Gobert, the last all-star left standing at Eurobasket. No Giannis, no Jokic, no Luka. Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, here's something about Luka, by the way. So the Slovenians got upset by the Polish on a Wednesday night. Luka fouled out. And one of the reasons he fouled out is because he got a technical foul. And in international basketball, you get a technical counts as a personal foul. This is seriously one of the things with Luka. I was talking to a scout who was there, and he was like, we were all laughing because before the game, Luka goes up to the officials and shakes all of their hands and smiles and nods and everything. And then literally when the ball goes up, he starts chewing on them. And like he is going to get, and like, I'm not even saying he doesn't have a case. Sometimes the officiating in FIBA is notorious.
Oh, it's awful. It's honestly bad.
You watch on ESPN Plus, sometimes when they go to the monitor, you can hear the referees' discussions with each other as they watch the monitor. And sometimes, and it's great. I think they should do this in the NBA. I'm sure they won't. But sometimes, like, they're completely on different pages of each other, even watching the replay.
It's incredible.
But Luka has got to calm down. He's got to calm down.
Because FIBA and the EuroLeague are, like, at war with each other, they can't use EuroLeague refs. So it's like you take the best however many dozen refs in Europe out of the equation. It would be like kind of like if you're
if the NBA finals are being done by G League refs.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And so there's some pretty rough officiating. Luka doesn't necessarily do great with refs, even when it's decent officiating.
Right.
But we can talk about it's part of the maturation process. We can also be realistic and say, you know what? Luka's probably always going to have beef with the referees. Chris Paul is 72 years old, and still every game is like Chris Paul is an attorney and the refs are.
I understand, but I'm just going to say that in international basketball, which at the end of the day isn't a priority on this show, but in international basketball, when there are five fouls,
I know,
and your technical counts towards it, you got to keep in mind.
Can't get technicals in the quarterfinals.
No, he got a late tee, then he picked up a foul, and there he is. I think they were down, I want to say, 5 or 7. Manny fouls out with 3 minutes and change left, and that's the end of EuroBasket for.
Yeah, and you had Serbia,
Slovenia.
Yeah, it's Serbia, Greece, and Slovenia already out, which, by the way, bonus trivia question. You know, the last time, because Slovenia and Serbia played in the championship game in 2017, as I'm sure the guy writing the book about Luka knows. You know, the last time the two teams in the finals of Eurobasket were the same two teams, two tournaments in a row?
I'm going to guess it was Spain against somebody.
Nope, it was the former Yugoslavia against the former Soviet Union 45 years ago, which shows you how insane these tournaments are. And if people are surprised when they hear, how did Giannis lose and how did Luka lose and how did Jokic lose? These tournaments are always a crapshoot. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
I'll bet the officials were a little nervous in that game for various reasons.
Yugoslavia won both those games, both those tournaments, by the way.
Of course. Of course, the Russians were nothing until David Blatt showed up and led them to the bronze medal.
Yeah, Arvidas didn't do anything.
I think they might have won the gold in 72. It's a perfectly legitimate gold medal in 1972.
Yes.
In Munich. All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you, Bontemps. Thank you to Audie Jackson and Bruce, our producers. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you next week when Bontemps, McMahon, and I are all going to be together in Los Angeles. Good God.
Ooh, boy.
We're going to buy Bontemps dinner.
That's right.
Oh, you do? Right. Why? What was that then?
Remember? The playoff fantasy thing.
That's right.
I don't recall, Senator.
And when I say we have to buy him dinner, it means that I'll order something and we'll use your credit card.
What are the parameters? What's the per diem that he's allowed to spend?
Well, Bontemps, like fancy dinner for Bontemps, just means that like you actually sit down instead of ordering at the counter. So, you know, I don't think you have to worry too much. It's
big talk from the Texan guy. Let's.
I mean, do we have to take him to the Palm, or
we're going to like Rodeo Drive or something?
They don't have restaurants on Rodeo Drive.
Well, but somewhere expensive.
Can we get by with Smashburger?
There we go.
All right. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.